Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 12 of The Roundtable with Andy McCullough, Mark Carrig. I am Grant Brisby. Usually we go through the week and we jot down storylines of fun and interesting baseball moments, whether it's a fantasy football slap or some great game or play. There's nothing going on this week. Andy, you got anything? You got anything?
No. I mean, no.
Mark, you got anything?
Yankees still good. Mets still good. Pirates, a little bit less bad.
So I think what I'm getting at is that we're just going to have a little bit of a riff session here on some things that are on our mind. First off, Andy, this is the first roundtable with both myself and Mark back. You did a solo show with one of either of us over the past 2 weeks. Who was better? Who wins? Who moves to the final round?
Yeah, Grant, as I said last week, it doesn't matter. I'm the star of the show, okay? The people are downloading to hear this, my strangely high voice that sort of like cracks when it peaks. You both did mediocre. I carried you. And, you know, it's going to be hard carrying both of you this week. No, it was great. Both of you guys were able to get some time off. I'm really glad. And you like now that we're all back, there's really nothing going on. Manny Machado's hurt. Mookie Betts is hurt. The Yankees win every night. Like, it's, you know, same deal.
But, you know, we did have, you brought up, all right, you wrote, you have been writing, right? You've been working during this whole time. So you've had to come up with stories. I'm in the same boat.
Well, yeah, there was some news. I mean, like Lorenzo Cain's career might be ending. He was designated for assignment by the Milwaukee Brewers on Saturday. You know, I had written something earlier in the week kind of talking to him. He was sort of aware. It was an interesting conversation because you could kind of sense like that there was kind of some sort of subtext and all. He was pretty open about the idea that like he was about ready to retire. And he was also pretty open with the idea that it seemed like his time as a Milwaukee Brewer was ending. And there also happened to be this milestone waiting for him on Saturday of 10 years of service time. I didn't exactly put everything together that like they would whack him as soon as he got the 10 years is kind of like a parting gift. But that's kind of how it went. He got DFA'd on Saturday. And so that might be it. I don't know. He might try and latch on with another team. He's a very, very good fielder still. He has not really been hitting, you know, so it's hard for me to kind of have the proper perspective on this because, you know, like Lorenzo Cain was a player I covered for a couple of years in Kansas City. He was someone I wrote about a lot in Kansas City. He was probably, you know, the two guys I probably wrote about the most were Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain. When you spend a lot of time writing about people, they take on sort of like an esteem in your mind. And so, like, I know that Lorenzo Cain really mattered to fans in Kansas City. I think Brewers fans, you know, really liked him. But like in terms of his appeal on a national level, kind of hard to say. There's very few players who reach that. But I thought it would be interesting, you know, from your guys' perspective on who fits that sort of category of all the guys you've talked to and written about over the years. Like someone who you really enjoyed covering, you really enjoyed watching, who may not have such a place of prominence in the collective psyche, but does for you, I guess.
I read your piece on Lorenzo Cain, and it resonated with me because it was clear that he was special to you in a way that isn't defined by war. How many times did you bring up war in that article, Andy?
Zero.
It's because it's just you when you're watching someone and you understand their importance to a team and they're fun to write about, they're fun to watch when they're in their prime. It kind of, gosh, am I turning into an old head when I'm saying it transcends statistics? Is that old timey speak?
Who is this guy?
That used to be the reason we watched sports. It didn't used to be about like winning an argument. It used to be about enjoyment, generating enjoyment from the thing. And watching Lorenzo Cain was like a pleasurable experience. He's one of, you know, the most aesthetically pleasing baseball players imaginable.
All right, I'll let Mark go first. Mark, do you have an aesthetically pleasing person you've covered from your career? Someone that you really enjoyed covering that maybe wasn't an MVP or Hall of Famer?
You know, I thought about this and I had a hard time with it because some of the people that I really enjoyed covering are like household names, you know? I'll throw out a name that used the words aesthetically pleasing. Juan Lagares got it better than anybody I've ever seen with my own two eyes every day. And it was awesome. When he was, before he gotten all beat up, gotten a little older, just a kid, running in every wall, diving every single time, leaving his feet every single time, and catching pretty much any ball in the air in center field for a couple of years for the Mets. So nice dude, like easy to cover, but honestly, it was a treat to just watch him play. Didn't need advanced metrics to see every single day this dude taking extra base hits away and being valuable to his team. Part of the intrigue was like he knew that the way he played, there was a shelf life there. My goodness, this guy was like, you know, sacrificing his body middle of May to try to take an extra base hit away from the Marlins. You can only do that for so long. But man, when he got up to the major leagues and they're running him out there in center field, it was unbelievable. Won a gold glove, I think, in 14. And it was almost like that didn't even convey the things he was doing night in and night out. So aesthetically pleasing player that I got to see every day. I thought about it. It was Juan Lagares.
That kind of speaks to there's a couple different parts of the baseball experience as an observer or a fan or an analyst where you're watching someone at bat or you're watching someone set up to pitch. And there's that anticipation of here's what's coming. I know what's coming right now. It's going to be an outcome of this at bat, an outcome of this pitch. With a great fielder, all of a sudden it comes out like it's like a jump scare. It's like, oh, that thing's going to happen. That thing's going to happen. Ah, that thing happened. And it's not, you're not anticipating it quite as much until it's like crack of the bat. Now you're anticipating for 2 seconds and you got it. And that's one of my favorite components of watching baseball. So that's, I love a good defender like that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember game 3 of the 2014 ALDS, the only playoff game in which Mike Trout has gotten a hit. I think it was Albert Pujols. Hit a single to center field, except Lorenzo Cain caught it on a line. Like he went down and got it. He burst up, you know, like pumping his fist. And I think that was like the moment when I think fans around the country first got a sense of like who this player is. And I don't know. I've been writing a lot about the Royals again. I need to something needs to happen. It's not healthy for me. It's just not healthy to live in that headspace and write about the 14-15 Royals all the time. We need something.
I will say this, and since we're speaking about low, right? I think that just as a fan of baseball, I was also a fan of like reading, writing about the game. And I think the people that I really enjoyed reading were the ones that were able to bring these characters out on the teams that they were covering. And so, you know, while it's a headspace you'd like to not be in, I guess, right now, Andy, you know, that story just reminded me of those years that you were on the beat in Kansas City, because I feel like you were bringing these people to life for a bigger audience. And it came at a time when they were getting good. People were paying attention to them. And, you know, you did that. You brought them to life. You made them characters, Hosmer, Gordon, Kane, all that whole crew. And when I think about doing the job well, right, and being a good beat writer and covering a team, and I think part of it is creating those characters or bringing them out, rather getting to know those people well enough that you can bring those characters out, whether it's you know, that crew that you covered, or I think about some of the more eccentric people that I've been around, like Juan Uribe when he was with the Mets. It was just an insane person, but like it was so much fun because you watched, like it would somehow didn't become tired because it was authentic, right? So I think it's fun to kind of be around that. It's fun to be challenged as a writer to bring those characters out because it's not like people get access to the clubhouse. That's what you're there for. And to relay it and to do it well, I think is important. And when people remember those teams, I think part of it's because there's so many characters on those clubs. Like Eric Hosmer is a good ball player, all right, but also an interesting dude. And you brought that out. So yeah, I think that's fun. And like that's what I kind of went to when we're talking about Lorenzo Cain and kind of this conversation in general is that I think that is some of the best stuff to read is when you can bring the characters out.
Well, thank you, Mark. I had my whole life ahead of me back then. I remember one time I was arguing with Gerard Dyson, which was more or less every day of my life for those 2 years. And we were just arguing. It was genial, but, you know, he was like, there was something that happened in the clubhouse and I wrote about it. And he was like upset. He was like, why'd you write about that? And I'm like, that's what fans want. Like, that's what they want. He's like, so you're saying that all fans want to know is what we talk about in the clubhouse and who and what we do away from the field. And I was like, well, not everything you do away from the field, but yeah, like funny stuff that happens in the clubhouse, that's all they want to know. And he was like, no. And I'm like, well, dude, I'm telling you, like, this is what people want to know. Those are fun times. Grant, who comes to mind for you?
This is a funny segue because when I was covering the Giants for SB Nation and as a blogger, I didn't have access to the clubhouse. I did not bring the characters to life because I knew them. I brought them to life because I made stuff up. And I was able to just kind of take these characters and impose what I thought their characters were. And so this might be cheating. He might be too well known, but Hunter Pence was an absolute delight to cover, to write about from my perspective as someone who just makes stuff up for a lot of different reasons. And I apologize if this is kind of like me bringing up an ex, because he is my ex podcast host. He was kind of in the previous version of the show. He was the guy. So sorry, guys. I don't mean to make you feel bad, but he was just different. He was someone who could hit the ball 450 feet at any given moment. He's someone who could run first to home in whatever time is a fast first to home. He's someone who could make a huge throw, like all these exciting five-tool things. And he did it all very differently. Very, very not Tom Amansky-like. Everything he did made Tom Amansky wake up in a scream like he was in a horror movie. So that's my guy because it was, you've never seen anyone like him. You'll never see anyone like him again. He was fun. He had a good relationship with the San Francisco fans right away. Everyone was engaged with them. I was engaged with them. He was engaged with the fans. Yeah, that was a special player to cover.
Pretty good. He's a broadcaster now, isn't he? Isn't he doing those Friday night games?
Yeah, he's fancy pants now. He's Apple TV. He's doing well. He's a bright dude. He's a fun dude. He's got a long career as a talking head in front of him. I loved watching him throw. It just looked like he had separated shoulders and, you know, hips where hips shouldn't be, stuff like that.
He had the that hit that he hit the ball twice in the 14 World Series.
Yeah, it was three times. It was the NLCS.
Oh,
and
right.
If you slowed it down super slow-mo, it was clank, clank, and then right as it left, clank. So three hits. And that ball had a spin. I think it was Pete Cosma who was the shortstop. And he moved the wrong way. And I've never, still to this day, seen a shortstop break the wrong way on a ball that went just a completely different angle. If you could teach that, that would be the new Moneyball.
See, that's cool to hear you talk about watching Hunter Pence like that. And this is cheating because it's a household name, but like the one when I talk about or think about, you know, trying to like think of who would I talk about like that, like you described, it's Mariano Rivera. You know, and that doesn't fit this criteria of, you know, not a Hall of Fame guy. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, right? But watching him play or pitch pretty much every day was remarkable because I feel like he was probably one of the best athletes I've ever seen. Like everything he did was graceful. He repeated that delivery. His command was so good because it never changed. And like he'd have that, you know, week where it was like, you know, you did your week of, oh, is he old? Is he done? Is he finished? And then he'd come back and, like, you know, have 10 straight saves and break a bunch of bats and maybe allow three hits in that span, right? So, like, it was watching him, you know, and the consistency and the way he approached it and he was almost kind of this regal figure in there. It was a trip. It was fun. It was interesting, not only because he was good, but like he was just sort of a different type of guy, especially in that clubhouse. So totally cheating because it's someone who's known, but you know, I want to throw Mariano in there because I feel like that was so much fun to see it, especially near the end.
I looked it up. I found my worst tweet about Hunter Pence. August 1st, 2012. High Sox and a 3.36 OBP equals a standing ovation for Hunter Pence. I think I was trying to say he didn't get, I don't, bad, bad, like really bad, bad stuff.
Oh, that's so good. I wish I can't, this is not like Miguel Cabrera for me. I can't just plop in Hunter Pence and get like a tweet that old. It's all recent right. stuff.
It's all from you the know, past like as, 6 weeks.
It's also like, oh, here, listen to the podcast. Yeah. Listen to this podcast. So I'm going to have to bow out of this one. But I do know I played up like this guy's got like, you know, intense eyes. And I played that joke into the ground and I go back and look at that stuff, especially a lot of the stuff I wrote for McCovey Chronicles, and it just, it rings hollow now that I know him. It's like, he's not that weird looking. It's like, he's a very normal, like, handsome man. It's just, but like...
I always felt for a long time Hunter Pence was covered sort of in the way The Onion wrote about Vice President Joe Biden, you know? Like, you know, Diamond Joe Biden washes car on White House lawn. Like, that was kind of the way Hunter Pence was written about in that era, yeah.
I accept that analogy and I embrace it because it was a caricature. I was writing about a caricature, not necessarily. But at the same time, it was when he would do good baseball things. Writing about the good baseball things was easy. But I asked him once on a podcast. This was like two episodes in. I said, do you know exactly who I am? And he said, no, you know, I know that you're a fan that got up and you had a blog and then you turned it into a career and you hustled and stuff like that. I was like, but you don't know specifically like the things I would write about different players, maybe like even you. He's like, no, not really. He's like, awesome. This podcast is going to work. And so I was very grateful for that because I do know that there are some people who read what you write. And I don't like that. I like them all to be like Hunter. Just stay. Don't read. I don't exist. I'm not important. I make not.
I like the idea better if he's like, yeah, you know, you were a fan. You wrote for, you know, Lookout Landing. You know, you're a big Mariners guy. Like, no, I am not. You're a big tall guy who, you know, vaguely sounds like Anthony DiComo. It's like, no, I am not Jeff Sullivan. Thank you.
I looked up a Hunter Pence tweet, also terrible, from August 20th, 2016. Hunter Pence has looked much better since breaking up with DJ Tanner. So this is a Fuller House reference because he made apparently a cameo and I must have watched it because I suck. So yeah, there you go. We're playing Hunter Pence tweet game. There is my submission. I am also embarrassed.
Did he date DJ Tanner on the show?
I guess. I mean, according to my Twitter, he did.
We have to probably draw this one out a little bit more. So let me just give a lightning round of just... players that are aesthetically pleasing off the top of your head. I had a backup in case you yell at me that Hunter Pence was too well known. Yosmero Petit. He is a guy that I mean, it's kind of almost trite to say like, oh, he doesn't have the big fastball. He's brains. He's not brawn and stuff like that. Those pitchers were fun as hell to watch. I loved Yosmero Petit and I loved the idea of a reliever who you can just throw out there, 3 innings, 4 innings. That is such a, like a good arrow to have in the quiver. And whenever he come out to hold a 1-run lead and then your team took the lead in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, or 6th innings, I just love that aesthetically, having that player and then having that guy who was good enough to be that player when he was at his long man prime.
You know, I'll kind of play off of that. Nestor Cortez is like that now with the Yankees because he's got the guts of a cat burglar. You know, like he's got his stuff is what it is. And yet for a while he was getting insane results, but like he's challenging people. It's crazy. Like I can't imagine standing on the mound knowing that I don't have like this fastball that pretty much everyone else can harness. And he's out there trying to do the same exact job and get these guys out, dudes who are trying to hit the ball in the air and out of the park. And he does it, and it seems like he's just totally unafraid. So, like, I don't know if it's aesthetically pleasing per se. I just think, like, the idea of it is insane. And I can't even, like, conceive of trying to do that. To be that short, you know, as far as just, like, straight-up velo or whatever, and to do that is pretty fun to watch.
Mine is in a similar vein. It's maybe a little too obvious, but Rich Hill. I mean, the guy sits 89 miles per hour. He used to get up into the 90s. It's a sensitive subject. Don't bring it up around him. But, you know, he sits 89. He mostly throws curveballs. He, you know, has spent like 10 years in the total wilderness. He's played for 11 different teams. He swears like a sailor on the mound. And then the other 4 days of the week, he has like the comportment of like a substitute gym teacher. You know, his nickname was Psycho Rich and Dick Mountain. I mean, there's just like everything you'd want in a character is there, you know, as and then watching him play was just always very entertaining for me.
What's the all-time list on here? These are people we've covered, but like, are there people that you guys just watched even before you were covering things that would be on this list of like, yeah, I'd watch that dude again? Because for me, it's Will Clark. I'd just watch him swing. Well, every time Will Clark had a bat in his hands, took a cut, you're looking at a dude who was like, it feels like he was put on this planet to be doing exactly that. Like, it was beautiful. You know, he'd whiff and just be like, wow, that was pretty.
In that, if we're going to extend our circle to Hall of Famers and stuff like that, I wish I watched about 700% more Tony Gwynn, because I watched plenty of Tony Gwynn, but that's one of the baseball reference pages I can stare at. And go, man, how much fun was that? And I wasn't necessarily paying attention when he was like a super fast runner and had, you know, a five-tool kind of arsenal. But Tony Gwynn is someone I wish that I could just rewind and watch a little bit and go through that whole experience again. Because like we have talked about here, I love the high average players. It's just like baseball events going out in the field. And I love that stuff. So Tony Gwynn would be my guy.
Roy Halladay for me. Just because, like, there was just a straightforwardness to what he was doing, right? He threw, it was like four pitches. Everything came out of the same chute, and nothing was straight, you know? And he just threw hard basically every single time. He attacked people. He didn't walk. You know, he just carved up lineups. I mean, he was just like, you know, it wasn't the sort of, you know, you watch, like, Corbin Burns now, or, you know, guys who are, like, real high-octane type players, right? Like there's a surgical nature to it, but this was like almost it was almost more relentless because he was generating contact and the at-bats were quicker and, you know, the innings were quicker, and there was just, yeah, I don't know, there's something just ferocious about watching him that was, you know, I always enjoyed.
He probably threw the best game I've seen in person. It was like a one-hitter in Toronto against a really, really good Yankees lineup. I remember looking up in the eighth inning, he was at like 78 pitches. I'm like, oh my God. So that straightforwardness you're talking about, like he took it right to him. And I feel like that's a team that scored a bunch of runs that year, and he made them look so bad.
He pitched the saddest game I've ever seen, I think, was game five of the 2011 NLDS against the Cardinals when he lost to Chris Carpenter 1-0. I think he gave up a run maybe in like the first inning. And then, like, struck out everyone after that. And Carp pitched, like, a shutout. Ryan Howard blew out, running on the last out. And the team, you know, was never the same. And I just remember going into the Phillies clubhouse. And Roy Halladay just had his head in his hands, you know, like, inside his locker for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. It was just, like, oof. It was heavy. It was heavy.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm not John Thorne. Like, I can't tell you if that is definitively the worst way to end a postseason series. But that, to me, is the worst that I've ever seen in any sport. You have the fans and they're like, it's over. And also franchise player is writhing on the ground. Like, you're trying to process five different things at once. And, I mean, you couldn't know it at the time, but that was
the end of the Phillies.
That is such a bananas demarcation line between... Because the Phillies, to that point, were the Phillies! Like, they were just, like, one of the best collections of talents you've ever seen.
Halliday went 8 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts, 126 pitches. Yeah, they lost. Oof, that's a tough way to go.
That is a tough one, boy.
Wow, this is going to be really... Gosh. That's going to be really tough to segue into the Golden State Warriors, or NBA champions! And yeah, Mark is a Golden State Warriors fan. I am a Golden State Warriors fan. So we had to get that in at least for a little bit because it allows us to talk about dynasties. This was something that you had opinions on, Andy, and I do too. First, we can all agree the Warriors, they're a dynasty. They have nice little bookends. They're still going. One of the best sporting experiences of my lifetime. I don't know about yours, Mark.
I can't believe that they're like a dynasty after watching them for 20 years of being not a dynasty. In fact, they were awful for most of it.
Include the last two seasons where you weren't watching before this one?
Well, okay. You know, I was watching. Like, it's harder to do that.
Oh, yeah. Very, very tough. Yeah, stink. Really tough.
But like, no, I mean, I read our coverage, thanks. But like, watching them as a kid, right? Like, they were that team that, like, they'd make the playoffs, but you knew they weren't going to go anywhere. Like, they just didn't have enough, right? Like, not with, like, the Lakers in West or whatever. So it's insane to me to go from that to this. I think it tells you a little bit. We talked about ownership a lot here in baseball, right? I think the Warriors are a classic example of that. They went from an owner who was not very good to, you know, owners who have a plan, clearly. You know, have set some kind of culture, and it makes a big difference. So it's like hard to conceive of the Warriors being talked about as some like model franchise, because if you grew up in the Bay Area and watched those teams after they traded Chris Webber away, right about there, and then Latrell Sprewell chokes out PJ Carlissimo, and what happens after that? Oh my gosh. Like, it's just, it's hard to conceive.
Did you ever read that Bill Simmons history of the Warriors? It's, even for his standards, it's like, you know, 8,000 words or something. It is just, and it goes through, and it's actually really, really, really well done, because it's talking about, okay, here's Robert Parrish, you know, here's Joe Barry Carroll, and it's like, it's just all the hits over the years, and the hits and the dings, and it, like, it builds up, and then this is before they got good again. So it's just like, hey, you know, you gotta give it to the Warriors. No one suffered like them. I don't want to turn this entirely into a basketball podcast. It's a lot of fun for me right now. But yeah, no, it's hard to believe that they're a dynasty. And that leads us to baseball dynasties and the idea of, do they exist? What does it take to be a baseball dynasty? Does anyone care about the concept of a baseball dynasty? Andy, you had thoughts. I will throw it to you.
I would be curious to know if you guys have a threshold where a team reaches that point, because I feel like the only club, there hasn't been a back-to-back World Series winner since 2000. The only club that really, I think, can argue that they fit that classification, right, is the 2010 to 2014 Giants. But if, like, say the Dodgers win the World Series this year, or the Astros win the World Series this year, do they tip over into, like, you know, how big does the gap have to be, given that we know how much variance is involved in the postseason? There's more variance in baseball than any other sport. You know, so, like, if the Dodgers, who've won the division 8 times in a row, then won 106 games, they won a World Series, they've been to 3 World Series in that time period, if they win again this year, is that a dynasty? Or the Astros, who've won the division, I think, every year since 17, they've been to the World Series 3 times, they've won it once. They may have some other things have happened during that time period, I sort of forget. But, like, if they win again, right, do they count? I don't know. It's something that really never comes up in baseball, probably because, like, Get Up, the TV show, never talks about baseball. But, like, I think it's interesting at the very least. Like, what is the threshold?
But you said it at the beginning of that in my mind. It's if you can repeat, because I think repeating is so incredibly difficult. You know, and obviously there's a lot of luck involved. It's baseball, right? Like there's variance, like you say. But I mean, is there a harder challenge than to repeat? Like I saw, I grew up in the Bay Area. Like I knew dynasties because you know what? The 49ers were a dynasty. And you heard those guys say it all the time. The hardest thing was to do it again. And they did. So to me, that's like step one, right? And maybe that's too old school a definition, kind of given how things have changed and you know, obviously a little different now. But I don't know. The first thing that pops into my mind is like, can you do it again? Just because I feel like repeating is probably one of the hardest things to do in all of sports, aside from just winning one, is to do it but immediately after, you know, when you've already satisfied that hunger and you're trying to do it again, feels like it's very, very difficult.
At the risk of being excommunicated from my little internet community, I will argue that the Dodgers are already a dynasty.
I will argue
because with baseball, look, it's not basketball where you've got five starters and you can go through your stars and there's a very, if the Warriors are the better team than the Celtics, you have an idea of how it's going to go. There are very few Warriors versus Jazz where, oh my gosh, how did that 8 seed beat the 1 seed, right? That's just not how it works. And football very much the same way where you're trying to push each other around a field and whoever pushes each other around the best is going to win. Baseball's just too random. So I'm going to look at the whole body, the whole 162 games, getting there, winning a pennant counts a hell of a lot in my book, because winning a pennant is no small feat. Go back to the days of the shot heard around the world. The Giants lost that World Series, but they won the pennant, and that still meant a hell of a lot back then. I'm sort of erring towards that now. And the Dodgers, the 90s, early 2000s Braves, yes, they only have one championship. But you knew that they were going to be there every year with a different, all of a sudden they found this guy, they plugged in this guy, they have these guys doing their best all along. And it's so reliable, so consistent in a way that baseball usually isn't that consistent even during the regular season. And to build that team that is just going to win division after division after division, get to the World Series, that to me is a dynasty. Maybe that's too spicy of a take, but I don't think so. I think that's like a baseball dynasty. You have to adjust for sport.
I think that's a slippery slope, Grant. I mean, because then, okay, so then you then the Astros are a dynasty.
I didn't bring them up because they're problematic. I would listen to that argument. That, honestly, like I joke about that being problematic, but it is hard to tease out, like, how did they get that one World Series? I will say one World Series gets you into the conversation if you get surrounded with a decade of good time.
Okay, so the Braves have won their division 4 years in a row, and they won the World Series. Is that a dynasty?
No, I'm going to need some 100 win seasons in there. I'm going to need a string of them. You know what I mean? The Dodgers haven't just won the division. They've just obliterated the division. So I am hedging a little bit on that.
Well, yeah, but like the Rockies are in their division. I mean, what are they doing?
Play Coors Field. Like, Coors, that's a 9-10 games out of every year. That's going to be murder.
I don't get agitated by fake arguments. But you are starting to agitate me.
Yes.
This is a terrible take.
Yes.
You can't. Like, I'm sorry.
Wait. So are the Braves right now analogous to the Dodgers in what they've done over the, like, they're totally, they each have one World Series. They've got a few division titles. Or is there not a way to separate?
Where are the pennants at, right? How many pennants for in this Dodger run? I think that's a difference.
Look, obviously they're better. Like, obviously they're better. I do think you have to win at least more than one in order to be in the conversation. You have to.
Yeah, it's tough for me when people say, oh, the Giants are obviously a dynasty. Yes and no to me, because I covered it, but at no point did I ever think any one of those three teams was dominant. They had derring do. They needed a little bit of a good fortune here and there. They won it in very different ways. 2010 is Lincecum is the ace. 2012 is Lincecum in the bullpen. 2014 is where's Lincecum? I don't know. And so it's not quite the same core.
That's not all that different from those Yankees teams.
Really? Okay. So maybe I just watched them just so mad at them.
The 2000 Yankees won 88 games. Like, you know, their whole thing was that they, you know, they won in the postseason, you know, because they were built to win, baby, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, you know, they had Joe Torre. What more do you need? I don't know. Mark, break the tie.
I'm curious about what the NHL definition is, because they actually do say that so-and-so team is a dynasty. The Edmonton Oilers, they have named a dynasty. The New York Islanders in the early 80s, the league is named.
Who's they?
The league. Like, the league refers to these teams, these parts of these franchises as dynasties. The Montreal Canadiens.
Does that, like, get their members, like, discounts on Bush Light well, or something?
Yes.
Or what? Like,
on,
what?
On Molson. You get Molson half
yeah,
price.
What is that? What is
like,
that
it's
get?
Dope, like, man. Like, yeah. Like, you have free tickets. It's all...
Yeah,
no,
you get a free Labatt if you're a member of the of a dynasty.
Man, I hope there's a Canadiens fan out there right now just furious with Andy. Like, no, just swearing
is
in French.
A, this
like,
is a baseball
insult.
Podcast. They don't
insult.
Have a team anymore.
So, you know, I think it's multiple championships. I'm going to stick with, like, if you can repeat... That's a big one. So we haven't had a dynasty in a really long time. Maybe we never have one again unless we redefine it. Because I think, yeah, the playoff consistency, that's really impressive. But like the divisions are five teams. It's not like back in the day where like it was eight. You know, that makes a big difference. Now, that said, dynasties were a little different back then because half the league stunk. Like badly, okay? Like they just were either poorly run teams or just didn't have the talent, combination of all of it. You know, like there were teams that were literally farm clubs for others, right? The Kansas City and New York back in the 50s. Like it was, they were just there to supply the Yankees with talent. So that's not necessarily the world we live in anymore. I don't know. I feel like the most obvious one is repeating, right? Multiple championships, division titles are nice. And pennants, like I think at your point, Grant, pennants are good, but you've got to do it more than once. And if you do it consecutively, and you have all those other things, you've won divisions, and like then that's dynasty talk. So the Yankees, obviously, back in the day were, but like we really haven't had one since. I mean, I might count the Giants because like that's a lot of winning in a small window. You know, and yeah, like maybe the teams weren't dominant, but like you still got to give them credit for actually doing the thing three times. And there were players in that run that you could identify with. And maybe that's one for me, as much as it pains me to say.
See, I go back to maybe there's too much recency bias with the Dodgers right now. So when I think of the Braves of the 90s and early 2000s, like, do you not think dynasty? Do you not think that they hold a special place in baseball lore for having Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz, for doing what they did, for winning, I don't know, what was it, 11, 12 division titles? To you had Hall of Famers popping in and out. So if they're not a dynasty, are they just a special team? Like, it was that the designation? Is there just no word for that?
I mean, they were special. Like, I mean, I remember Turner Field, they put all the pennants out in left field, and I was there a lot, right, covering the Mets. And like, it was just really impressive to me to see that many flags up there. Like, it was really, really impressive. And yet, I feel like if you were to poll the average baseball fan, hey, what about those Braves teams from the 90s? You know what they'd say? Only one championship. There's not even a question that that's what they would say. And so on one hand, like, dude, I really respect what they did, the consistency they showed and all that. But if we're having a dynasty discussion and literally every baseball fan, you know, even Braves fans might say that, only one. Like, it's hard to put him in that category. I don't know what the word is for that. It is impressive to win that much that long and to have those types of players pass through. No doubt about it. Not to take anything away from it. But man, what a weird legacy that is to have. It's the refrain that's almost universal. Wow, one World Series. Wow, you know, like, and it's not a compliment. So,
right. It's an insult. Strong. You mentioned legacies, Mark. And because there's just like no way, you know, because I've just been, I'm on the elliptical in the morning. And so I'm watching a lot of like hot take TV on mute and trying to figure out what people on TV are talking about. It seems like there's been a lot of discussion of like Steph Curry's legacy. And then somehow, like, there's discussion of, like, somehow Kevin Durant's involved. I think he and Charles Barkley have been fighting for, like, 3 weeks or 2 months or something. And I'm just, what I'm wondering is, like, there's a lot of discussion in, you know, like, with quarterbacks in the NBA, like, individual players' legacies. And I was trying to think of who in Major League Baseball even has anything at stake in that regard anymore. Like, I feel like Clayton Kershaw for the longest time had that. He was the guy, right? Like, he was the person who was like the main character of the postseason. I think now that the Dodgers have won a World Series, that he was a, you know, vital contributor in that, he sort of no longer fills that role. But like, the sport doesn't really have that, I think. Because there's, you know, Mike Trout sort of absolved because of all of the, you know, the fact that he plays on the Angels. Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander are the pitchers comparable to Kershaw, but they've never really occupied that space. I guess what I'm wondering is, like, who is the next player who's going to get to the postseason and there will be a discussion about that player's legacy in the process?
That's good. I would guess it would be, based on, as of this recording, 50-17 record, literally any member of the New York Yankees making more than like $10 million would be in that discussion.
Yeah, like Garrett Cole or Aaron Judge, basically.
Yeah, I think that.
It's wild to me that that franchise doesn't have a single player on it that won a World Series there. Think about that for a second, right? Like, the, given their history and the types of players that they've had through the years, I mean, when was the last time do you think that happened? I think I tried to look this up, and I got back to like 1970 or something like that, where there was literally not a single player on the roster that had won a World Series with the Yankees. So that's a good call, because I think Aaron Judge actually said this recently, you know, having covered him, like, I feel like this isn't just a thing he says. I think he means it, where it's like, we've done nothing. Then he's talking about that core group, the young guys that came through, and then Stanton, like, we've done nothing. And he's kind of right. You know, with them, like, doing something is to actually win the thing. It's kind of remarkable that there is not a single player in that room that knows what it's like to go up the Canyon of Heroes. So that's a great call. Judge, Cole, the big money guy, Stanton. You know, I definitely agree with that.
I used to, when the Yankees were winning all those World Series in 98 and 2000, that I was really just annoyed at the Yankees and their fans for caring, for trying, for actually winning it again, because I thought, you already have one. You already have two. You know, why do you need a third? Like, it's greedy. I despise their fans for it. And what I've grown to appreciate as I get older and wiser is that baseball seasons are long. And the failure of one isolated baseball season, you have put 500 to 1,000 hours into that season of failure. And then the next year, you have expectations. If that one doesn't work, you've put 500, 1,000 hours into that season. And so by the time you're a Yankees fan in 2022, you get to be annoyed. You get to be like, it's not, oh, come on, you just won back there in the late 2000s. Come on, you look at the Mariners. They haven't made the postseason since 19-dickety-doo. And with the Yankees, like, no, I get it now. They get to be annoyed. And for as high pressure of an environment as that is, it's remarkable. And so Judge is right when he says we haven't done anything, because in the minds of the people they're trying to entertain, that's what they think too.
Well, the good news is, Grant, is they're like winning a playoff series away from being a dynasty team. So that's good. Like, if they can get by the wild card game this year, Grant will be like, oh, yeah, it's a dynasty.
No, they're not the same thing as the Dodgers or the Braves of yore. It's very different.
Is this a stance like you trying to get some sort of like street cred as a non-Giants homer by picking like the anti-Giants as a dynasty?
Listen, Dodgers fans do love me. You know, I just
going to call it the Drysdale Chronicles.
Well, they should.
From here on
Wait,
out.
Did Dodgers fans actually dislike you? They should love you. You're a really like great empathetic writer. So like,
Dodgers fans do like me. No, I'm dead serious.
Yeah, they should.
But it's I'm not trying to be contrarian. I think that there is a spot. I think the dynasties are in baseball. I don't know. I guess I will agree. When I thought you were saying consecutive repeating, Mark, I was thinking back to back. If you are including gaps within the years, I will agree that one more championship, I will concede the point, at least two championships in that stretch to me, as long as it's not 2 and 3 years and then a bunch of misery all around. Like if the Orioles had won 2 and 3 years when they were up, that's not a dynasty. But this extended, if you take the Braves, give them one more championship, take these Dodgers, give them one more. That's my final concession.
Well, to your point, right? You're talking about it being somewhat disjointed. Like, look at the Boston Red Sox. Like, we've been talking about the Yankees, and the last time they won a championship was 2009. Look how many the Red Sox have won since then. Is that a dynasty?
There's dips.
Yep. There's no connectivity, it felt like, right?
The Red Sox experienced too much polarity. Like, they're really good, and then they're, like, awful. Like, the Yankees have not been awful at any point in this stretch. They also haven't won. So, like, I don't know, which would you rather have?
Yeah, I think I'd rather have the Red Sox. Like, I think, I mean, as much as I enjoy a good regular season, and those are important for mental health, like, I think it's the Red Sox, you get the full gamut of the baseball experience.
This is one of my favorite things about, because I'm a dork and like I remember reading about the A's a lot as a kid. This is really interesting. Like, so they've had dynasties in Philadelphia, like way back in the day. They also led the league in last place finishes during that time, right? So like they'd be like for like 4 or 5 years be the best team on the planet, and then for like 20 years be absolutely horrendous. You know, so Connie Mack, like Hall of Famer, I think, like has the most last place finishes from any manager ever, something like that. Yeah, it's crazy.
I think I go with that. You got to have at least one championship. And then there's kind of a freedom in those bad seasons where you get to watch some guys and go, you know, think like, oh, maybe this will be a part of the next good team. And there's like a different kind of baseball fun. So give me the baseball variety.
Yeah, I'll take a good baseball team.
No, you don't want to bring Bobby Valentine in for one fun year?
Well, I mean, if I had to watch it every day, like, I would rather have, well, I guess it depends. Am I watching it or am I covering it? If I'm covering it, yeah, I'll take Bobby V for a year. That sounds like a good time. But if I was, like, watching it as a fan, yeah, I want the team to be good. I want to know that they're going to be there in the postseason. I want to feel invested. I want to feel like I have a reason to turn on the game tonight other than because I like baseball. Because, you know, at this point, like, there's other baseball games on, too. Like, you know, if you have Peacock or MLB.TV or
HGTV,
Apple.
Oh, HGTV is awesome.
Yeah, their coverage is fantastic.
Are there
baseball games on HGTV?
They go into each other's stadiums and they fix them up.
Yes. You see the Oakland Coliseum one, the Oakland Fixer Upper? It's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, this is a podcast.
Joe and Chip, like, pulling it aside. Like, oh, look, there's a home for the rats. It's great.
Possums.
You know? Oh, we fixed the plumbing. Yeah, possums. Great.
Oh, this is a podcast, so you can't see the look on Andy's face, but it is quizzical. It is a quizzical. Oh, yes. He actually cocked his head like a Labrador, just like, what the you guys talking about?
He went hot take Andy today. That was awesome. Like, on the elliptical, he's like,
that's as hot as
this is hot as he gets.
That's spicy. It's spicy.
Moderately spicy.
I'm fascinated by Get Up. I think Get Up is like the most interesting television show like running, because they have talked about how Tyreek Hill said Tua is a more accurate passer than Patrick Mahomes for a month straight. Like, they've talked about, and it's like, and I keep looking, and the Chiron keeps saying the same thing, and it's like, you know, Tua says, Tyreek says Tua is more accurate than Mahomes, and I'm like, man, they're doing it again, and it's like, all right, now it's Tuesday, and I'm like, I'm on the elliptical, you know, I'm grinding it out, like, I'm doing fake exercise because I'm fat and my knees, you know, can't tolerate running, right, and then it's like, oh, it's Wednesday, and it's like, Tyreek says, you know, Tua is more, and I'm like, they're still talking about this. This is great. Like, what I want, and I don't have it on because I have headphones on. It's on mute. It's like, it's riveting. Like, I'm riveted every day.
As a casual football fan, like, I'm only tangentially aware of it, who any of these people are. I mean, I know Mahomes, but yeah, that doesn't appeal to me at all. I'd rather talk about position players pitching. I guess that's why I'm here.
It's funny. No, I'm hooked by that. Like, what a ridiculous statement to make.
It's great.
What a
ridiculous
statement to make. Like,
I love
it. Crazy to me to say that. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. It's asinine.
Anyway. That'd be like saying this podcast is better when one of you guys isn't here. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So that's just madness.
Oh, last week was pretty good. All right, but this has been episode 12 of the Roundtable. We will be back next week, and we'll just jabber a little bit. And baseball stuff will happen over the next week. I promise you that. We all clear about that? Some baseball stuff's going to happen?
We're going to hope.
All right. We will see you then. Thanks so much for listening.